Well, I was sad and then I loved you. Because I see one guy who's still in his prime, who's a proven major league hitter from your lineup last night, and that's Brian Reynolds. One guy.
Was there a question there? Was there a question there? Was there a question there?
I guess the question was, I think, what did I follow up with? Am I seeing that correctly or something like that? Better phrase, the question could have been or should have been, do you feel like you've been handed a lineup that no matter how you configure it isn't going to work? You know, because that's the truth from last night, Paul. And from the season, I should say.
I find it very.
They have one guy who's in his prime, who has something of a hitting resume, and nobody's given Brian Reynolds MVP votes. He's a slightly above average player.
Right. I would tell you this. If you look at it, they shouldn't be in this situation, though. If you look at the pedigree of some of the guys they have, they shouldn't be in this. These guys.
You mean pedigree, not major league pedigree?
No,
just
but I
their
mean,
talent
the,
level?
I mean, allegedly, according to where they were drafted and signed and all that other stuff, they should not be in this situation. They should be in a situation where these guys are developed and ready to go. And I know major league hitting is hard, and he said that a few times, but some of these guys should be further ahead than they are. That's what's troubling to me. Like you've had Henry Davis in your system 4 years.
Right.
And I know he's a young player and yada, yada, yada. But, Joe, is there anything that you have seen this year, any glimpse at all, that suggests that he's going to figure it out this year?
No.
He looks completely lost and completely overmatched.
No.
Okay?
He needs a trip to the minors.
I know O'Neal Cruz is what he is. I get it. You know, he's coming off an injury and all that stuff. He should be further ahead than he is. I Brian Reynolds is a.
What about Sawinski?
You know, Sawinski's a guy I've always felt like is a fourth outfielder at best, situational player that maybe gets you some home runs off the bench. I don't have. I'm talking about the guys that they're supposed to be riding right now.
I would say Sawinski's one, and I agree with you. I don't know that he's a viable everyday player, but they thought that this guy is a 4-5 type hitter who's going to hit home runs for you, who's only 25, who's coming into his own, and it's again, we're off to a disastrous start. We asked him at the beginning, what's the case for keeping Andy Haynes? And basically, Shelty said it's a team-wide letdown but there's only one guy who, on his job description, is, quote, hitting coach.
You're right.
And it's not about the month of April. It's about 2 years plus the month of April where they just, I don't know what they're trying to do. I don't know. I do know that they're bottom five in runs scored since he came onto campus, you know?
Right.
Is it all his fault? No. It might he completely not be at fault because they don't have any good players? Maybe. But that's where you have to start, for God's sakes. Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That and calling up guys from the minors.
Right. That's the whole point. You get into a situation where you basically are sitting here and you say to yourself, it's the old thing. You can't fire the players. You know, you can't fire a bunch of players. You can't fire all the players. So you've got to do something to move on.
You could fire five of them.
Right. But you've got to do something so you can move on from the one guy who is at the top of the food chain. And I think that's the thing. One of the things that's really frustrating to me, Joe, is that it doesn't seem like from the top, and when I mean top, I mean top, it doesn't seem like there is a whole lot of motivation to be held accountable. And what I mean by that is, like, if I was the owner of the team, I would be I would be in Charrington's office every single day.
Yeah.
Why is Andy Haynes still here?
Yeah, well, that's what we started with today.
You know,
is Bob Nutting needs to pull an Art Rooney and say our offense doesn't work, because that was bottom. That was rock bottom last night. That was the Steelers in Cleveland the day before Canada got fired.
Pull the idea that, hey, this is not working. You need to change this. And also have some discussions about some of these guys we're talking about that are in the minors. Look, I don't care what boxes you think they've checked or haven't checked. They got to be better than some of the guys you're running out there every single night.
Right. He, and I think this is a perfect time for him to do something here. I have a hot take that's unrelated to any of this or really anything, and I don't even know why I looked it up. But I'm going to tell you this right now. And I don't know if you agree with this city limits or not, Paul. I thought Sam Howell was pretty good last year for Washington. I mean, he played for the Commanders. I'm looking at his game log right now, Paul. This guy against the Eagles one game went 39 of 52 for 400 yards, four touchdowns, and a pick. That's Pickett's whole career in one game.
Right.
He had another game against the Artie Smith's Atlanta team where he was three touchdowns, no picks. He had another game against Seattle, 29 of 44 for 312. Three touchdowns and no picks. And then granted, he slid badly at the end of the season. He's playing for Washington.
Right.
I thought when I watched them, the rare occasions when I would tune in and see Washington, that he was pretty damn good and a lot better than Pickett. And in the right system with weapons and everything else, I think the kid's pretty good.
How do you think he'll do in Seattle? Obviously, they have Geno Smith, but
I don't know. It was his first year as a starter. He also runs, by the way. He averaged 5.5 yards a carry, got almost 300 yards and five touchdowns.
Right.
I think the kid's pretty good. Maybe I'm crazy.
No, I think he's fine. He's not somebody that moves the needle, but he's an average NFL quarterback.
I think he might be a needle mover, Limits.
With decent weapons, he's okay. But
good weapons in a good system?
He's not somebody that wins big games in December.
How do we know that already? He's 10 years old, Sam Howell.
I don't like the decision-making that he made. Now, I'm not studying every single play of the Washington football team slash commander slash whatever you want to call him these days, but it just, I don't know. He's somebody who threw for a lot of yards, partly because Washington was losing in a lot of games.
I think that's very unfair charge from you, and I resent it.
I would say of the younger quarterbacks in the league, he's one that probably has a chance to be pretty good.
I agree.
I watch him play, and he's got the basic physical tools that some of these guys I watch, and I'm like, that guy can't make there's certain throws this guy can't make, or this guy's not very athletic.
He makes throws, man.
He makes throws. He can throw. I mean, I would say if you put him in the right system, yeah, I think he could be a good player.
Is he the best quarterback of that draft class?
Here's a hot take for you.
No.
Limitless wonder.
No.
If you had given me a choice of Justin Fields or Sam Howell this offseason, I would have taken Howell.
Hot take. How was the Malik Willis, Kenny Pickett draft, right?
Yes, there was a guy that was drafted Mr. Irrelevant at the end of that, yes. But if you take Mr. Irrelevant out of that, Brock Purdy.
Then yes, he is.
So you had Howell.
You had Levis and Butthead. Was that the same draft or no?
Yes. No, Levis was last year.
Oh, yeah.
So you had Howell.
You had Willis.
Malik Willis.
Pickett.
Kenny Pickett.
Desmond, get rid of him.
Desmond.
Yeah, Ritter.
Matt Corral.
I forgot all about him.
Chris Oladukun.
Two-time Super Bowl champ.
Two-time Super Bowl champ.
Put
Chris
some respect
Oladukun
on his name.
Bailey Zappi. That has to be if Purdy hadn't come along, that's the worst quarterback class of all time.
It's up there.
Thank God for Purdy.
There was a couple that were...
Skylar Thompson.
It's up there with Jake Locker, the Blake Bortles draft.
This is the worst quarterback class of all time, save for Purdy.
Well, Purdy makes it, you know what I mean? Here it is right here. Look, listen to this. I found this article when I was talking about this, doing a show the one time. Okay? Mm. How about this? So they have this as the worst. 2007.
Let's hear it.
First rounders, Jamarcus Russell and Brady Quinn.
Well, of course, he did beat the Steelers in a Thursday night game, but go ahead.
Round two, Kevin Kolb. Mm-hmm. John Beck. Mm-hmm. Drew Stanton.
Oh, my God.
Round three, Trent Edwards.
Bills.
Round four, Isaiah Stanback.
He stood back for his whole career.
Round five, Jeff Rowe and Troy Smith. Round six, Jordan Palmer. Round seven, Tyler Thigpen. And the undrafted free agent, there was one that was undrafted free agent. He was actually the best of the entire list, Matt Moore.
That's borderline tragic.
That is definitely the worst. That is because they don't even have a Brock Purdy.
I'm telling you, Sam Howell could be a good quarterback. But let's talk receivers. Let's talk all these Steelers stories. Bryant McFadden, did you reach out to him yet, Limitless Wonder?
No, I need you to pass along his information.
Oh, well, we'll
do that. I personally don't have it.
He, you know, intimated that something big is happening with a playmaker at receiver. Somebody said, boy, it doesn't look like that today. And he said, what did he say? Be patient?
Patience, my brother.
Patience, my brother. I like that. And Bryant's a very, very sharp and connected guy. Could it mean Cortland Sutton? Even though the Broncos say they aren't moving on and the Niners say they aren't moving on from Ayuk or Samuel. A lot of teams say things. Let's go out to Denver to Andrew Mason. From denversports.com. Do I have that right, Andrew?
Yeah, denversports.com and 104.3 The Fan in Denver. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, 104.3 The Fan in Denver. What is happening out there with Cortland Sutton? Is there any chance they would still move on from him? And do you think he could wind up in Pittsburgh?
Well, as a former owner of the Broncos would say that in the United States, anything can be bought or sold for the right price. Anything has a price. So I think with Cortland Sutton, it's a matter of meeting whatever that price tag is perceived to be by the Broncos. But I think I think they're willing to ride it out and get what they feel would be a fair price, which may be more than others are willing to pay. Now, of course, what's going on with Cortland Sutton is he is not at off-season workouts. Those began a couple of weeks back, and he is not there because he wants more guaranteed money on his contract. He signed a four-year deal back midway through the 2021 season, has gotten past the guaranteed money, would like more guaranteed money, and that's why he's not there. And so the question is, does he really want to be in Denver going forward with a new quarterback in likely Bo Nix, their first round pick, whose skill set may not mesh with him when you've got, and then obviously in Pittsburgh, now you have Russell Wilson and Wilson, kind of buying time, moving around and then throwing a moonshot that really does actually play into Cortland Sutton's skill set and was a big part of why he had a career high in touchdown catches last year with 10.
Well, and I think that's the big question is, if it's a contract dispute, there's still a chance that Denver and Cortland Sutton can come to some sort of an agreement on an extension or whatever he's looking for in order to make this whole thing go away.
That's a good question, and I think part of it may also depend on just the other receivers that the Broncos have in there. And this may be something where, from Denver's perspective, it doesn't come to a resolution until they see how Tim Patrick, a solid receiver who isn't as dynamic going up for those jump balls but can make catches in traffic, how he looks coming off of 2 years of injuries, a torn ACL in the 2022 training camp and a torn Achilles a year later. So he hasn't played since January of 2022, but is a very reliable receiver and could handle that X receiver role that Cortland Sutton has had. If they find out that Patrick can do that, then all of a sudden Sutton becomes a little more expendable in terms of what they're trying to put together on offense. So the Broncos may be in a position to be patient on this, see how Tim Patrick looks, and may also say, okay, we're going to sit and wait, and maybe we get the best deal. If we want to move on from Courtland Sutton. Maybe we get a better deal going into training camp. And then if they don't get the deal they want, I think they're more than happy to put him out there, even though he's not his skill set may not be best accentuated by Bo Nix if Nix happens to be the starting quarterback.
Andrew Mason from 104.3, The Fan in Denver. All right, Andrew, if you had to characterize the Russell Wilson experience in one paragraph or so, how would you do that? And do you think he has a chance to do something good here?
Well, even though the Broncos invested a lot to get Russell Wilson, you look back on it and you see that there was a lot of misalignment. First of all, rewinding the clock back to early months of 2022, they've just hired Nathaniel Hackett as the head coach. Nathaniel Hackett comes over from Green Bay, where he's worked with Aaron Rodgers for back-to-back seasons in which Rodgers won the MVP. Plan A was Aaron Rodgers. And when that failed to come to fruition and Rodgers re-signed with the Packers, Plan B became, oh, well, Russell Wilson is an accomplished quarterback and he's available. Let's go get him. But Wilson and Hackett putting the concepts they wanted to run together, it was a Frankenstein's monster of an offense that was too deep, too complex, didn't work, and Wilson had the worst season of his career, and Hackett got fired after 15 games. And there were other things going wrong with Nathaniel Hackett as well. And then you bring in Sean Payton, and Payton wants a rhythm and timing-based offense, 1-2 and out. And that's not Russell Wilson's game. Wilson is at his best when he's going beyond the structure of the play, making things happen by buying time in the backfield and extending it, and receivers breaking off their routes. It's definitely much more improv, as it were. Or maybe a better comparison is Sean Payton wants a quarterback who's going to be the conductor of an orchestra, playing everything as it's written on the sheet of music. And Russell Wilson's strength is he's more of a jam band type of quarterback. He's kind of, pardon me, going with the flow of things and doing things beyond structure. And so it was completely misaligned there for 2 years with Russell Wilson. If it works out, part of it is going to be, letting Wilson do what he do best and living with the fact that it's beyond play structure. And then if that's how it ends up going, and you can kind of live with the high variance, then it's got a chance to work in Pittsburgh.
Well, and I think the other question that a lot of people here have is, how much does Russell Wilson have left in the tank? I watched him play last year. I didn't get the sense that he was an aging quarterback at the end of the rope, right? I mean, you watched him obviously up close and personal. He's still got a couple of years left in him, doesn't he?
A couple of years, yeah. I mean, I think he came to Denver with this goal of playing into his mid-40s. I don't think that's possible. Where you see the age starting to affect him is when he's taking off and running. I think of one play in particular that they had in the game against the New York Jets last year. He takes off, he ends up falling just short of the first down, and the Broncos have a turnover on downs because it was fourth down. And that's the kind of play that he would have gotten pretty easily just 4 or 5 years ago, right? And so taking off and being able to make things happen with his legs, that's always been part of the Russell Wilson equation, but he isn't as dynamic there in that part of his game as he used to be. And that's a huge tool on his tool belt. And if that's not there to the degree, is he able to make up for it by being a more precise passer? Based on what we saw the last couple of years, that didn't happen as well. So I think it's sort of accepting kind of who and what he is in this year when he's going to turn 36 years of age during the season.
Lastly, Andrew, we got about a minute left. How would you describe the vibe around the drafting of Bo Nix? Are people excited about that? Are they cynical about that? What's happening?
I think it's a little of both, depending on who you ask. I mean, the thing that most people will say is that he is a good fit for Sean Payton. Short to intermediate accuracy, good job of being able to place the ball. You know, he can get it to the correct shoulder when he's throwing a receiver. He will lead a receiver and allow that pass catching target to stay in stride and accumulate some yardage after the catch. The question on Bo Nix is he going to be able to do enough, especially outside the numbers and down the field, to really stress a defense to where there are going to be enough gaps in coverage short and underneath. And that's where the arm strength, arm talent equation comes into play. And that's part of why you were talking about Bo Nix being the sixth quarterback taken, because he didn't have the cannon that, for example, Drake May possessed going off the board 3 to New England. So that's where the questions lie. If it works, it definitely is a scheme fit. The other question also is, what is his ceiling here? I mean, you know, Broncos fans got kind of spoiled with Peyton Manning and then a long time ago, John Elway. If Bo Nix comes in and his arc looks like that of Derek Carr, is that enough for the fan base? And is that enough for the team that is trying to cope with a Goliath like Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs there atop the AFC West? That's a big question too.
And then I got a yes or no. Jerry Jeudy comes to the Browns and is a game-changing type player.
No, because I don't think he will be as consistent as Browns fans are hoping. I think there will be some flashes, but at the same time, there are also going to be head-scratching moments where you wonder, why can't he do this game in and game out? And that's basically what he is at this point. When he's at his ceiling, he'll do some great things, and he'll get separation, and you'll be like, wow. But can he do that on a consistent basis? That's always been the question.
Andrew, we really appreciate the time, man. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. You guys have a great day.
You too. That's Andrew Mason. He didn't make it sound like it was imminent, the Cortland Sutton thing, by any means.
Exactly. I mean, it sounds...
But everything and everybody's for sale in the NFL, right?
They are. I mean, he's obviously a guy who, the reason these rumors start, it's so easy to see how it starts, though. He's a guy that's right now in a contract dispute.
Right.
I mean, you can call whatever you want to call it. Hold out, hold in, whatever, you know, all the cutesy words we use. At the end of the day, he wants a new contract. The Broncos, at least to this point, have sort of balked at giving it to him. And so he's doing what his only mechanism really as a player is. And, okay, well, I'm not going to come to your offseason workouts. To which, if I were the Broncos, I'd say, okay, who gives a, you know, we'll see in September when the game checks start. You know, I'm sure you'll be here. We don't need you at OTAs and minicamp. Who cares?
You know, something very curious is happening here, Paul. We said that Kevin, I'm sorry to interrupt, although you sounded like you were finished anyway.
No,
right?
Well, the other thing I was going to say was the one thing I wanted to ask him, are people in Denver excited about Bo Nix?
I did ask him that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
It must have been mixed in with a lot of.
It was mixed in, yes.
Was it? Well, how did you ask it?
I said, what's the vibe in Denver about Bo Nix? People excited or cynical? Oh. He said a little bit of both.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I missed that.
Sorry you missed it.
I'm just saying, that's what I would have wanted to know. Are people excited about it? What did he say?
He said a mix. Yes, you missed that too. Listen to this. Listen. Don't disappear on me here. Kevin Weeks tweeted out these eye emojis, Paul, with a photo of downtown, our downtown here across the Clemente Bridge. What does this mean? Is there an event, big event, NHL-wise, coming to Pittsburgh? I do know this. 21 hours ago, he tweeted this. Listen to this. There could be one current NHL coach that might potentially hit or surpass Mike Babcock's industry-leading $7 million per year deal he signed with the Maple Leafs. It would take plenty of factors for it to align, but plots are thickening. What is going on here?